This is Curtis Fox for ACLU.org. On April 26th in New York City, writers and luminaries from around the world gathered for a night of readings to help end torture, arbitrary detention, and secret kidnappings by the U.S. government. The event, entitled Dirty Wars, was sponsored by the ACLU and the Penn American Center as part of the Penn World Voices Festival. In this selection, Mark Danner, author of Truth and Torture, reads from government documents released to the ACLU under the Freedom of Information Act.
Hello, my name is Mark Danner. It seems to me, in trying to understand how we Americans have come to live with torture, because we have come to live with it more than 3 years after the photographs of Abu Ghraib were broadcast and published, one has to think about euphemism. Not only the euphemisms used by President Bush, who calls the techniques you've heard about and will hear about tonight an alternative set of procedures, but also the euphemism used by bureaucrats wearing nice suits in air-conditioned offices and putting check marks in boxes, very far away from those people in cold, artificially cold, artificially hot, dark, dirty, stinking rooms who have to put these procedures in some form into effect. Probably the most interesting document I have seen in the thousands of documents that have been published, that I've published in my book, that many others have published in their books that have been public now for 3 years and more, about interrogation techniques, was a document from 2002, December, signed by Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense. It was a document with a lot of boxes in it. The boxes appeared before recommended interrogation techniques that were a list of euphemism, adjustment of temperature, use of noise to induce stress, adjustment of clothing to induce stress, adjustment of meal times, adjustment of light and dark. Before many of these boxes, Secretary Rumsfeld had placed his check mark, had initialed the document at the bottom, and had then written in his very precise and lovely hand. However, this was after an item that permitted forced standing for 4 hours at a time. He wrote at the bottom, "However, I stand for 8 to 10 hours a day." Secretary Rumsfeld uses a standing desk, as you may know. "However, I stand for 8 to 10 hours a day. Why is standing limited to 4 hours? DR. Now, it's an interesting question what exactly this indicates. Does it indicate he is a sadist? I would say not, although he may well be. It indicates, it seems to me, a kind of chasm between bureaucrats who believe that they must continue to exert leadership and pressure on their subordinates to obtain information, and those people who, out in the field, many times ignorantly, often brutally, carry out what they perceive to be the requests made of them. The CIA, which uses forced standing as one of its 6 interrogation techniques, along with the belly slap, the attention slap, the attention grab, the cold cell, waterboarding, the most infamous of those. The CIA uses standing up to 40 hours at a time. Did a study of the effects of standing on the human body. I'll read a couple of sentences from it. This is from the 60s. As you may know, forced standing was one of the major techniques of the Soviet Union. It was called stoika. After 18 to 24 hours of continuous standing, there is an accumulation of fluid in the tissues of the legs. The ankles and feet of the prisoner swell to twice their normal circumference. The skin becomes tense and intensely painful. The edema may rise up the legs as high as mid-thigh. Large blisters develop which break and exude watery serum. The accumulation of body fluid in the legs produces impairment of the circulation, and so on, leading to collapse. I'm going to read the account of a prisoner, an Iraqi who was seized at a roadblock in Iraq in October 2003, at the moment when the insurgency was first spiking and the Defense Department was realizing that they indeed had a true insurgency on their hands. His name, or he is known by the euphemism Detainee 7. He gave this statement to Criminal Investigation Division investigators from the Army who were investigating Abu Ghraib. He was later released. He was an intelligence hold. That is, someone the Army thought they could obtain valuable information from on the insurgency. The first day, they put me in a dark room and started hitting me in the head and stomach and legs. They made me raise my hands and sit on my knees. I was like that for 4 hours. It's a stress position. Then the interrogator came, and he was looking at me while they were beating me. I stayed in this room for 5 days, naked, with no clothes. Adjustment of clothing to induce stress. They put handcuffs on my hand, and they cuffed me high for 7 to 8 hours. Very common torture technique throughout the world to pop the shoulder. That caused a rupture to my right hand, and I had a cut that was bleeding and had pus coming from it. They kept me this way on 24, 25, and 26 October. And in the following days, they put a bag over my head, sensory deprivation. And, of course, this whole time I was without clothes and without anything to sleep on. One day in November, an American police came in my room, put the hood over my head and cuffed my hands, took me out of the room into the hallway. He started beating me, him and 5 other American police. I could see their feet only from under the hood. The hood increases the effectiveness of a beating. You can't cringe. You don't know when the blows are coming. They made me sit like a dog, and they would hold the string from the hood and make me bark like a dog. They were laughing at me. One of the police was telling me to crawl in Arabic, so I crawled on my stomach. The police were spitting on me when I was crawling and hitting me. The police started beating me on my kidneys, and they hit me on my right ear, and it started bleeding, and I lost consciousness. The ear was pulled mostly off. The interrogator later sewed it back on in the cell. A few days before they hit me on my ear, the American police put red women's underwear over my head, use of sexual humiliation to induce stress. He tied me to the window that is in the cell with my hands behind my back, another stress position, until I lost consciousness. They told me to lay down on my stomach, and they were jumping from the bed onto my back and onto my legs. One of the police was pissing on me and laughing at me. Then the policeman started opening my legs. He's nude, of course, all this time. With a hood over my head, he sat down between my legs on his knees, and I was looking at him from under the hood, and they wanted to do me because I saw him and he was opening his pants. So I started screaming loudly, and the other police started hitting me with his feet on my neck, and he put his feet on my head so I couldn't scream. Then they put the loudspeaker inside the room, they closed the door, and he was yelling into the microphone. Sexual humiliation and threat to induce stress, and noise to induce stress. They took me to the room, and they signaled to me to get onto the floor. One of the police, he put part of his stick that he always carried inside my ass. I felt it going inside me about 2 centimeters. I started screaming. He pulled it out. He washed it with water that was inside the room. Then 2 American girls, this is female military policemen, that were there when they were beating me, they started hitting me with a ball made of sponge on my dick. When I was tied up in my room, one of the girls with blonde hair, she was playing with my dick. He's handcuffed at this time. They were taking pictures of me during all these instances. This goes on for a number of pages. I want to note that I read this in public the last time during a debate with John Yoo, a professor at Berkeley who wrote many of the documents I have a point to make, which is that Mr. Yu was ashen after I read this document. He came to the microphone and said, obviously, plainly, this activity is illegal. And he said this, I believe, in good faith, for he had never read any of the documents or, so far as I could tell, any of the reports, and indeed had written, the euphemisms. So between the men who get tough in offices in Washington, and the men and women who actually do the getting tough in rooms in Iraq, Guantanamo, Afghanistan, and many other places, there is a rather wide chasm of language and of practice that has allowed these things to become institutionalized and in some way has allowed us to live with them. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this ACLU podcast. To learn more about the challenges to U.S.-sponsored torture, detention, and extraordinary rendition, go to ACLU.org. And for more podcasts, go to ACLU.org/podcasts. For ACLU.org, I'm Curtis Fox.